Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams, and now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears along with you here. Getaway Friday, October 30th, 2020, 12 and a half minutes past the hour, and we have got a great hour for you. You're not going to want to switch that dial because of where we are in the world right now, which we'll get to momentarily. Have a little bit of housekeeping here to do before we get to our guest. Here we go. Monday, WWGH Radio will be celebrating the 100th anniversary of President Warren G. Harding being elected President of the United States. He was elected on November 2nd, 1920. Coverage will start at 8 a.m. from 8 a.m. until 10 a.m. on this program. We will have Scott Rankin on, the foremost Warren G. Harding impersonator in Ohio, and Jim Blessing, the grandson of President Warren G. Harding. And guess what? We're going to tell you how Warren G. Harding's grandson, closest living relative, is going to vote in Tuesday's election. That coming up very shortly. Monday night, we're going to have a special here on the station, 7:10 to 9 p.m., a Warren G. Harding 100th Centennial Special. I'll be here during that special, and I will be interviewing Craig Shermer. Actually, this interview was conducted about a week ago. He is the foremost Florence Harding impersonator in the United States. He's been interviewed on The Daily Show and many other places. Yes, it is a man playing a woman, but you've got to hear this to believe it, and we conduct the interview as if I was talking to Florence Harding. It is going to be something to be sure. You can listen online, WWGH1071.com, or by downloading the free TuneIn app and searching WWGH. Also, election night, live election coverage, our seventh year doing this, 7:15 p.m. We will begin. I will be anchoring that coverage. We will not break away. We will have people stationed everywhere. We've got Terry Tackett at Republican headquarters, Linda Sims at Democratic headquarters, Mike Wilson will be at the Board of Elections, and I will be joined in studio by Sean Kraft, 40th Treasurer of the United States under President Bill Clinton, Mary Ellen Withrow, and 2016 presidential candidate, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. That will all happen on election night here in Marion. Now, with all that being said, and it is truly an amazing time, the pandemic, according to our governor yesterday, Governor DeWine, is raging. Those are his words, certainly in Ohio and around the country. Tomorrow is Halloween, a full moon for the first time since 1944 on Halloween. Who could have predicted that during this pandemic and an election coming up on Tuesday? Saying all of that, there's only one person who can sort all this out. He has become a really good friend of this program, and I can't be happier about that. Could not be happier about that. You probably remember him best as ABC's chief White House correspondent, or possibly his role as co-host with Diane Sawyer of the immensely popular news magazine, Primetime Live, or possibly his many appearances with David Brinkley on This Week, in which he then co-hosted with Cokie Roberts, the late Cokie Roberts, years later. Nobody better to talk to this morning than this man, Sam Donaldson. Sam, how are you?
Well, those were the days. I think I'm okay. But, you know, when I hear that Governor DeWine, a man that I respect very much, says the virus is raging, when I've been assured by the President of the United States that we have turned the corner. There's no problem here. I'm confused. Well, not really.
Well, you know, Sam, I want to start by saying this, because it was a little confusing yesterday here in Ohio, because Governor DeWine used that word, the virus is raging, but then said I'm not going to put any restrictions in place right now.
Well, that would be a conundrum. I mean, that would be a, it's a big word. Maybe I don't even understand it, but it would certainly be a contradiction because clearly the experts, Tony Fauci, my guy, I say my guy, I think should be everybody's guy, the chief infectious expert in the United States, says he wants a national mask mandate because to try to quell this thing, and we haven't even seen, apparently, what winter is going to bring. We're not there yet. We are seeing an upsurge, but, hey, you ain't seen nothing yet, says Fauci and the rest, if we don't take extraordinary measures. Now, I believe in science, because I'm not a scientist. I don't know much about it except what the layman reads and tries to remember from his college days. Biology? You want me to tell you about the valence tables? No, forget it. But I believe in these people who are the only ones we can look to for the guidance of expertise. And they say it's coming, and it's going to be terrible, and we must take the measures that we know now can help prevent the worst. And when I see people who are still not wearing masks, who are they? Who are these people? I mean, do they have any common sense? Do they have any, when I say education, I mean, you can be educated in a way and not having gone to a single school in the world except experience. But doesn't their experience tell them that it's better to be on the side of the experts than on the side of people who are, my gut tells me. Well, you take your gut, please, and take a, you know, some magnesia enema and do something, but don't attack the rest of us, because that's the basis. You don't want to wear a mask because the protection it may give you is not worth it. At least protect the next guy. To protect your mother, to protect your children, protect your next-door neighbor, protect someone that you like very much, and wear a mask so that if you get the virus, and maybe you're a lucky one that doesn't have even symptoms, certainly not at first, but you are able to spread it to others, protect them. Why wouldn't you do that?
Sam, every state is different. Certainly we look at Florida right now and we can see a big difference than other states. And certainly the trajectory that this has been over the last almost 8 months now in the United States is different. But here in Ohio, we've been fairly similar to what the country has been doing. And it's kind of puzzling right now because in the beginning, we were all told this is going to be horrible and it's going to be horrible quick. And so we shut down here in Ohio, and a lot of states followed suit. And then they came back, you know, right around Memorial Day, and they said it didn't end up being as bad as we thought. The numbers didn't get as high as we thought they were, so this is good. So let's start to open everything back up in pieces and give the restaurants restrictions and open up the zoos and all this sort of thing. The numbers went up again. And then in July, we said, okay, wait a second, let's put this mask mandate in because we don't want to shut everything down. We'll kill the economy. The numbers came back down a little bit, and then we opened up the schools, started playing football, Big Ten and high school, and here we are.
What's the lesson we learned from what you say, and I think correctly, was sort of a roller coaster effect as people, including experts, began to learn more and more about the virus, began to weigh the effects of not protecting against it, with the economy going south in big time, people out of jobs, applying for unemployment compensation by the millions every week. So what's the thing we learned? Isn't it that the virus can't be tamed simply by saying, bad boy, go away, here, we've got you down now, so we're going to let you up in the sense that we're going to ease up. Let's go back to the bars. Let's go back to the restaurants. Let's go back to the groups of a lot of people together. And let's forget the masks because, yeah, I look kind of silly wearing the mask anyway. What have we learned? I think I've learned that we'd better take it seriously and stop the nonsense of thinking, well, we've turned a corner here when we have now back to 1,000 deaths a day, when our infection rates are going up in 41 of all the states, and big time, and we haven't come yet again to the big winter cold and the groupings that that can cause if we don't do these things. Have we not learned anything?
You know, well,
it's amazing.
Sam, we have both said this morning. Neither of us are doctors. We're not politicians. But here's what's going to happen in the next 7 days. We just heard from our governor and many people across the country that this is raging. It's bad right now. But tomorrow, we're going to have Halloween all across the United States. Maybe the biggest holiday where kids and adults come together all year round. Not a holiday, but an event. It's going to happen tomorrow. It's going to happen here in Ohio. It's going to happen everywhere. Big Ten football is going to play tomorrow. And on Tuesday, we're going to send people to the polls in an election year, which has a higher turnout than any other year in that four-year cycle. Where are we going to be on Wednesday?
Well, I don't know. It depends on how we act individually and collectively from the standpoint of trying to get the virus under some sort of control. And I can't tell you, because you have said it up and down, up and down, up and down. Every time we sort of think we have it tamped down somewhat, oh, no, let's open up. Hey, let's go to the football game. Let's have baseball. I mean, let's go do this. We want to get back to normalcy. My friends, you want to get back to normalcy, or you want to go to the Undertaker? You just take your choice. Normalcy will come eventually, we're told, and I believe them, when we have effective vaccines that have been distributed widely so that enough people have gotten them and they are effective enough to begin to tamp down the virus scientifically. That's when maybe we can start returning to normalcy. Look, I have four children. They're all grown. They have families. I haven't seen them in almost a year. That's not good. I love them. I want to see them. I think they might like me too. But to get together, to put them on airplanes because they don't live anywhere near me, is not something we want to do. Because we all want to get through this without someone, particularly me at the age of almost 87, with an underlying condition called old age, getting to the ICU and not coming out.
Well, you know,
it just amazes me that people make their choices of what they want to believe and who they want to believe. They also then want to make the choices of what risk they want to take. Here's the risk, but here's the advantages of taking a chance. Well, go ahead. I can't.
Well, where we stand with an election just days away, hours away, it doesn't, I don't think, take a rocket science to figure out why Donald Trump is downplaying the pandemic right now. This is a mandate on his reelection. But what has that done to the United States, the President of the United States downplaying this right now?
Well, he has convinced many of his faithful followers that they don't have to worry, and that it's all a plot, either from QAnon, either from the deep state, either from these terrible Democrats who are no longer Americans, and what are they doing in our country anyway? That's what he's done. I mean, a leader last spring, and maybe even in January and February, would have started leading the country toward doing the things that the scientists say we need to do. And he did just the opposite. You know, the election, let's get on the election, because I don't see anything in this last weekend that will change the trajectory that we see in individual states and, of course, nationally in the national polls on this election. And I'll tell you one election that I remember that was going into a weekend of great indecision, 1980. In 1980, on a Friday, before the next Tuesday in the voting, all the polls showed that election almost dead even. Jimmy Carter's polls, running for re-election. Ronald Reagan's polls, running to unseat him. The national polls, all of them said, hey, this is a toss-up. This is a toss-up. This can go either way. And what happened? Well, on Sunday, the Ayatollah Khomeini from the great country of Iran gave Jimmy Carter one more shove. Carter's latest proposal for negotiation to free the hostages, our American diplomats who were being held captive in Tehran, were on the table, and the Ayatollah was considering them. And he replied on Sunday and said, no. And the American public said, okay. Jimmy Carter's a nice guy. We don't find anything terrible about him. but he's not been very effective. And certainly on this one, he's not been effective. We want those hostages back. We've got to take a chance. And this guy, Ronald Reagan, may get us into a thermonuclear war with the Soviet Union, but maybe not. And so it was a massive rejection of Carter in just 3 days. Now, I don't see anything on the horizon, but of course an astronaut can hit us and half the country could be destroyed, God forbid, that is going to change this trajectory. I think it's cooked in. And I think the thing now to consider is, what will Donald J. Trump and his merry band of followers try to do about it on Tuesday and on Wednesday and maybe on the days beyond? I think that's where the focus ought to be.
What are the options for him? What do you think most likely would happen?
Well, unfortunately, the option of accepting defeat, if in fact that's what I believe is going to happen to him in a fairly run and counted election, is not on the table. He's not going to do that. I mean, I hope to be shocked, shocked almost to death, not quite, if he comes out the morning after Tuesday, when ballots are still being counted, but enough electoral votes clearly, fairly counted, have put Joe Biden over 270, and says, all right, I wish I'd won, but I didn't, and I'll help with the transition. If he does that, roll me over and count me dazed. But it's not going to happen. What he's going to do, apparently, and this is all speculative, he's already set the stage. Mail-in ballots are going to be declared illegal if he can do that. If he gets the courts to do that, eventually, the Supreme Court, who now has a majority of conservatives. But do not think for a moment that all of those conservative justices are going to turn over and roll over for Donald J. Trump. I don't believe it. I can give you enough historical examples of decisions by that court which you think is cooked in one way or the other, and it turns out that one or more key justices say, I'm going to just look at this evidence, and I'm going to look at all the facts that pertain to it in the Constitution, and I'm not going to do that. And so I'm not going to say the court's going to side with Trump, even though what he's trying to do is clearly not, as we say, truth, justice in the American way. So the likeliest thing is we're going to have violence. I don't predict it in every city, every street, with the AK-47s faced off and things like that. God forbid again. But one of the scenarios that people are talking about is that on election night, on election morning in the East, people begin disrupting the polls. There'll be a long line of people still waiting with masks on, we hope, waiting to vote. And there's violence there. Not just taunting, not just intimidation, but violence, disrupting, fights breaking out. And the president then says he has no choice but to ask the governors to call out the National Guard. He has no choice if the violence continues to even try to ask the military to help him, or help the country, he'll say, because he'll try to present the election day vote, not just the balloting that's already in, and it's too late to put it in the mails now, get it in the drop boxes if you've still got a ballot that you've marked, but it's not been presented. He's going to try to make it appear already that this election is illegitimate, here, there, and yonder. And he has no choice but to stay in power. And that's the danger.
There's so much surrounding this, and we're going to get to it in the next 30 minutes with Sam here. But, Sam, there is a scenario being laid out right now that I think a lot of people are looking at. The last presidential election, 2016, everybody said, even going into election night, Hillary Clinton's going to win this, Donald Trump doesn't have any chance, and Kellyanne Conway was saying there's a hidden Trump vote. So there is this idea being spread around now that even though all these polls, which are really showing Trump way, way behind at this particular point, as you correctly pointed out, unless something changes over the weekend, we might have a foregone conclusion here. But the Trump voter is saying, look, that you did this in 2016. The polls are wrong. The polls are screwball. So they believe that he will win, no matter what the polls say. So if he doesn't, they're going to say, whoa, 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 wait a second, the fix is in, and here comes the civil unrest.
Well, they may believe anything they want. I may believe that the moon is actually made of green cheese, but if it's not, what I believe is of no consequence. And this is not 2016. And let me tell you some things other than the polls. That is, a public opinion poll by telephone or by any other legitimate means, conducted with weighting the various people you talk to as to what their party affiliation is or their age or what have you. We see that in many, many states, the registration has gone up remarkably by young people, remarkably. We don't know, because we haven't counted them all, how many Democrats newly registered, how many Republicans newly registered, but where they are being counted, in many of the states, it's a Democratic registration. Now, it's not a poll. So the more Democratic voters have registered to vote than had been registered before. That's a product of the fact that we have more people in the country, I understand. But my favorite example is in the Philadelphia suburbs. In the Philadelphia suburbs, and I'm not just telling you an old wives' tale, this is, the data is clear. In both of Barack Obama's elections, 2008 and 2012, he got 200,000 more votes in the Philadelphia suburbs than his two opponents, John McCain and Mitt Romney, who were, when I say ordinary Republicans, I mean good, conservative, party people, well-known, no great scandals and all of that. In other words, they were defeated in Pennsylvania thanks to that. Now, what happened in 2016? Some of our people say it's not 2016. You're quite right. She didn't get them. She didn't get the extra 200,000 votes. They didn't vote. Now, some of them voted, obviously. But what I'm telling you is, and here, this is data speaking. This is not a poll. This is facts. They stayed home, some of them. Many of my guests thought, well, my guy isn't on the ticket like he was. I loved him, but you know, I don't care about this. And many of them, for various reasons, just didn't vote. Well, every indication you see is that they're coming out this time, and they're coming out for Biden. Now, again, things could happen. But if you look across the country at the key states, the swing states, yes, you can say, all right, the polls say that Biden's ahead 5 points in Minnesota, or in Florida, even maybe 2 or 3 points, which is within the margin of error, I understand. But that doesn't mean he's got a lock on it. But it does mean that it's not Hillary. And I'll tell you another thing. One of the things the people who study these after-the-fact pieces of data have seized is that on Election Day in 2016, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump were about even as far as likability was concerned, meaning neither one of them was really liked by a whole majority of people. Both of them, for various reasons, I suppose, were not likable. Well, Joe Biden, pardon me, good old gray Joe, just the nice guy, doesn't make a lot of waves, doesn't excite you, your heart does not go pitter-patter, pitter-patter when the name Biden is, or when you hear him speak, he is liked by over 23% more than Donald Trump. Now, in other words, if you forget the polls per se and you look at the indications of what people say about their choices or their prospective choices, this election is not 2016. And a Trump follower may say, I believe he's going to win because I think he's the greatest president we ever had, and anyone who doesn't vote for him is nuts. They can believe that. Doesn't mean it's going to happen.
Sam, I'm going to take a minute to set this up because this has been a conversation that has been being had for about 30 days now. The two one-term presidents that we have had in the last 40 years, just picking up off what you just said about Hillary and Trump and likability and Joe Biden, in 2016, we'll start here. 2016, yes, there were a lot of people who disliked Trump, and yes, there were a lot of people who disliked Hillary, but when they went to the polls on that day, in 2016, Election Day, They wanted Hillary to be president if they voted for her. They wanted Trump to be president if they voted for him. Okay, let's go way back to Jimmy Carter. Ronald Reagan...
May I just interrupt you?
Yes,
I know,
go ahead.
I'd like to hear everything you say. The vote in 2016, as people have analyzed it, was not the overwhelming vote for Donald J. Trump. Yes, he won by about 87,000 votes, spread over three states, Minnesota, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. And she had a surplus of over 3 million votes coming from the blue states. That's correct. California, New York, etc. But in that, it was a vote basically against her that upset the polls rather than a vote for him. I just wanted to put that point there. Please tell us about the other one.
Yeah, and this is the point. You're right on track with me here. 1980, Reagan and Carter. Carter's the sitting president. You just correctly spoke. He was having problems with the Iranians, no doubt about that. But people liked Ronald Reagan. We found out about this. They liked him. He won 49 states 4 years later. He was the great communicator. That's the moniker he got. People liked him. I got the feeling in 1980, people voted for Ronald Reagan. They liked him. He was good. They thought he'd do okay. Then we go to 1992. George H.W. Bush is a sitting president. Bill Clinton is the challenger. People liked Bill Clinton. Saxophone on Arsenio Hall. He was younger. He had that way of speaking at debates where George Bush was looking at his watch and Clinton walked over to the lady. I feel your pain. People liked Bill Clinton. This is different in a way because it is the possibility that Donald Trump could be a one-term president. But as you rightly said, are people really voting for Joe Biden? Could it be Donald Duck as the
Democrat? No, you're exactly right.
Yeah.
Pardon me again for interrupting, but you all see where you're going, and you're exactly right going there. There's going to be, I believe, a massive vote for Joe Biden. But it's not that Joe Biden has set the heart pitter-patter. Joe Biden, his presentation, all his record and all of that is just so overwhelming. It is a vote against Donald J. Trump. People are coming out. They'll vote for Biden. They don't have Jill Stein. They don't have any third-party candidate to siphon off any number of votes. They're going to vote against Trump. He is an unpopular person, except, of course, for his loyal followers. And some of them may, in the secrecy of the voting booth, some women may, their husband thinks he's one of the, hey, he voted for Trump, but his wife's going to vote, and she may not. It's a vote against Trump.
So that being said, if Biden does indeed win, which it looks that way right now, but who knows what will happen, being a president who is elected just because we really hated the last guy, which I don't know if that has happened in modern times, does that give Joe Biden any kind of a mandate? What kind of president do you think he would become?
Well, I know him since he first came to the Senate when I was a working reporter in Washington. For a long time, I haven't been a social friend of his, but I've known him, watched his career, and what have you. I believe him when he says he will make an effort to unite the country. Every president says this, including Donald Trump on election night in 2016, as he gave a little victory speech, said, I'll be the president of all the people. I think Joe Biden means it, and I think his policies will not please everyone, but they'll be directed that. And the question is, if he becomes president and the violence, which I've said, I think there'll be some, but it's not overwhelming, we settle the election within some days, or as in 2000, at least within 5 weeks, I think if he has Congress with him, and I think there's a very good chance, Senate flips, they only need four, there are nine seats that are toss-ups, really, at this moment, and eight of them are Republicans seeking re-election. The ninth is the senator from Georgia, from Alabama, who probably is going to be defeated. But they only need four. Flip the four, give President Biden the House, houses, with with Pelosi, the Speaker, again, is there. If the Senate becomes a Democratic majority, then I think he can get some programs through. Certainly, if it's not done by then, we'll have another relief bill. look at the travesty of bringing these Americans who have been shut out of their homes now, losing their homes, and they have no money in the bank. They're not eating a lot of food except from soup kitchens like the Great Depression. That is a crime. That is a crime that we've allowed this to happen. But it's been allowed.
By the number...
I think Biden will try to do the things that a normal president of either party, you know, whether it's a Republican or the Democrat, that I've known over the 52 years I was in Washington and been studying time before that, Warren G. Harding. I mean, would Warren G. Harding, who met an untimely illness and death, I understand, but would he have allowed this to happen? Would he have allowed millions of Americans? Maybe, but I think not.
The way the numbers look right now, it looks as if Biden will win. It looks as if the Democrats will keep the House. And it looks as if, now this is probably the most up in the air thing right now.
It is up in the air, but it looks like it may flip. That's right.
Yeah, the Democrats could take the Senate. Now that being said, if the Democrats take the Senate because of the Supreme Court, because of McConnell putting all this stuff on his desk and not even putting it up for a vote, is payback going to be a you-know-what come January?
Well, I hope not. But, of course, human nature being what it is, and if I were, you know, now going to become the majority leader of the Senate, if Chuck Schumer and all of that, I'm not certain how I'd act, but I would hope I would say, all right, let's over. King's X, let's start fresh here. Let's work together. Let's negotiate. I'll give some. You give some. I mean, come on, let's go. That's the way I covered the Senate when I came to Washington in the early 1960s, 2 weeks after John Kennedy was elected president. Yes, it was a Democrat majority. But when it came to the great Civil Rights Bill of 1964, the last speaker to urge the breaking of the Southern filibuster took 67 votes, was not a Democrat, was not a liberal, was Everett McKinley Dirksen. The Republican leader, yeah, he made a deal with Lyndon Johnson, etc. But senators on both sides worked together. Medicare, the Republicans opposed the Medicare idea on the principle that the federal government's job was to help its citizens, but not cradle to the grave, not, you know, tax all the money for free medical. All right. But on the final vote, having lost the argument to the Democratic majority, almost half the Republicans voted for it. Okay, it's not our idea, but the majority has the votes. We want to help the old people. We're going to vote for this bill and then hope we can improve it. Hope we can change it when we get the majority. That's the way it worked. And I think Biden, you ask how would he perform, I think he would make an effort to see if we could begin getting back to working it that way. Now, you know already we have the evidence of what Trump does. The Democrats are traitors, not just people that we think their ideas are bad. Look the way he talks about a lot more than half the country, because he's in the minority. Look the way he talks about his opponents. Look at the vulgarity that he spews from the stands. That's not Biden. That's Trump. You want another 4 years of it? Not I.
For all of us who will be on the air Tuesday night into Wednesday morning, like we always have been, in modern media of television and radio, for all the people who will be listening and watching us on Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, probably not a concession speech, probably not an acceptance speech, as we have had before, but are we going to have a pretty good idea who the President of the United States is Wednesday morning because of early mail-in voting and people who will turn out that day at the polls?
Well, I think in a normal sense, we would have a pretty good idea, at least by dawn the next morning. Jimmy Carter finally was declared a winner about 2:30 a.m. after the day of the election. So, I mean, I'm not saying by 11 p.m. Eastern time. Of course not. The California is still voting, etc. almost. Normally, we would, given what you and I have just been talking about, looks like the trend is very favorable for Biden. Looks like, for instance, you watch these people on the broadcasts who have the board, and they show you the states, and they show the possibilities of this state, that state, and the other state. And they all agree that they could even give all the toss-up states to Trump, and he still can't make it. All right, so that would be a normal thing, yes. Whether someone concedes or not, we would know. The theory is that, yes, on election night, you're not going to get someone saying, all right, I concede, or I won, but you may get Trump saying, I've won, even though what we know, minus, you see, all the uncounted mail-in ballots say that he's lost. He says, I've won, and he puts into place a mechanism to try to ensure that ballots don't get counted now, and that even if they are counted, his people declare it illegitimate. They believe him, that he's been stolen from them. I mean, it's a nightmare scenario. But I think we can't discount it because we know the man. We know Donald J. Trump. We know who he is. We know what he cares about himself. And we know how he acts with whatever is necessary to preserve his view of what he wants.
We know right now that people have turned out early in large numbers. If you have already voted or mailed it in at this particular point, chances are your Board of Election is going to have it on Tuesday. Now, different states work different ways, but some can start counting midnight, early Tuesday morning, or Monday night, however people want to do that. And some states can start counting those when the polls close in their state. But of course you can count the people who will vote that day. That all being said, doesn't that amount to about 80-90% of the people who are voting? Those ones that will trickle in on Wednesday and Thursday, do you really think that is the possibility of swinging this one way or another, no matter what the president might say?
Well, maybe it's a possibility, depending on the state. I think Pennsylvania is a state that does not start counting its mail-in ballots until the election day. Florida, on the other hand, is counting now. It's counting now. Florida, the big state, the state that is so important, and Pennsylvania is important also, it's counting its ballots. And I'm not in a position to have enough knowledge to tell you whether it can complete the counting of the ballots on the end of election day or not. But the mass of ballots, as you correctly point out, that have come in, just overwhelming. But some states are not going to count them until election day. And those are the states, the ones that are the swing states, and Pennsylvania certainly is an important state. We may not get them all counted for days. And if it comes down to Pennsylvania, then we wouldn't know, again, in a fair count, who might be the president without anyone trying to disrupt the count or call it illegitimate or what have you, we would know. But I still think you have a chance of being correct if you, as I think you have, said we may know the next day. We may know sometime in the early morning or late morning hours of Wednesday.
In the last 40 years, a one-term president has only happened twice, which makes it pretty much a rarity right now. It could happen Tuesday into Wednesday. When we look back at this, we talk about Donald Trump's tweets, we talk about his rhetoric, we talk about the things he says, we talk about his decisions. He was impeached, some people have forgotten about that. A lot of pardons, everything that went into Donald Trump. Was really his Waterloo the pandemic?
Yes, I suppose so. Without the pandemic, I don't know how you and I would be talking at this point. Even though he still would have only, he's never gotten an approval rating that even approached 50% of the country. And if we were here at this point and he had not gotten an approval rating that approaches 50% of the country, Joe Biden was his opponent, but we didn't have the pandemic and the evidence of his non-feasance in trying to lead us into the best place to handle the pandemic. Yes, the economy still strong. His favorite indicator, the stock market, still a bull market, the greatest one in history. Yes, he could be reelected, of course, despite what I think was his vulgar, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But he has demonstrated in this pandemic that is killing people, 225,000 and counting and mounting at the moment in this country, that he has been incapable of understanding the leadership necessary to do it. He made a bet, having told Bob Woodward, we heard the tape, so it's not Woodward's word, that he knew in January that this was a very dangerous virus, that it was transmitted through the air. He had been told that, and he said, it was much later in the conversation with Woodward when he said, well, you know, I didn't want to panic people. He didn't say it then. Had he, at that point, his Peter Navarro, his trade representative, I don't know the man, but he has a memo to him saying, this, watch out, this, and his national security advisor told him, you're facing the greatest crisis of your presidency in what's coming. This was in January. Had he taken hold of it, despite all the other stuff or anything that someone like me objects to in his policies or his presence, his personality as the leader of this great country, I think he'd be reelected, sure. But we don't have to speculate on that because that's not what happened.
There are two interesting stories that have come out in the last 7 to 10 days, and I want to get your thoughts on them, Sam, here in the last 10 minutes. This is an unbelievable number. Nearly 70% of U.S. adults say the presidential election is a significant source of stress, according to the American Psychological Association Stress in American Survey this month, a dramatic increase from 2016 when 52% of Americans said the same. 70% say this election is causing anxiety, fear, and dread. Why, Sam?
Because of where we have come to as a country, and we've been moving that way before Donald J. Trump became president of the United States. He was just the last, when I say straw, it was the last oak tree that hit. We've been moving apart on the fundamental idea of the future of this country and the world. One side says, the world is more and more diverse, power centers in Asia, not just in the European Union and elsewhere. Someday, it'll even be Africa and Latin America are becoming contenders, competitors, and some of them, like China, threats to us. And we've got to engage with them. We've got to work with them. We've got to be parts of international organizations. And in our country, we've got to welcome people that we've always welcomed here in the United States. Now, some people haven't ever. When the Italians came, we didn't welcome them. When the Irish came, because they couldn't eat, there was nothing to eat, we didn't welcome them. By we, I mean a lot of people that were here. But basically enough people said, yes, we're an open door. We are the, forgive me, shining city on the hill that Ronald Reagan talked about. So a large part of the country says we must continue to do that. Another part of the country says, I want these people out of here. Who are these Mexicans anyway? They're crossing the border illegally. How dare they? And don't talk to me about their children. Talk to me about the fact that they're taking jobs here. Talk to me about the fact that I don't want to live with them for various reasons. I mean, part of the country wants to go back to an America of 1955. Hey, I graduated from college. That was a great year. Oh, we had a good president, Eisenhower, whatever you think of him. In other words, that was normal for my early generation. And we've become abnormal. And the values here, the values was basically still a white Christian country. We had other people of other faiths, of course. And we had other people that weren't white, naturally. But when people of other faiths began to grow in numbers and people who were not white began to grow in numbers, the country had to decide, what do we do about it? Do we accept that this is okay? And do we accept that we, hey, let's all get together? And one of the great philosophers of our time was a man half beaten to death by the California police, you'll recall. And he came out of it and said, hey, why can't we all get along? Well, the country came to this point and Donald Trump said, my view is no, we don't get along. If you like me and support me, you're a good American. If you don't, you're the enemy. And so here we are. And these people, you say, why are we upset? Why are people stressed? It's not a normal election. It's not like, hey, well, okay, Al Gore lost and he left and George W. got the best. It's not that day. Or Jimmy Carter, we sat home and here's Ronald Reagan. It turned out pretty good. You know? This is not a normal election. Both sides seem to feel that this election is the hinge point for the way this country, I think they're right, the way this country is going to go. And which way is it going to go? And if you're not stressed, you're not paying attention.
Which leads us to an interesting segue here, not being a normal election. This was about 2 weeks ago, but I think it bears repeating. The USA Today, because if you go into any restaurant, library, people get this delivered to their house. The USA Today has been a very important newspaper in this country for about 40 years.
Yes.
USA Today has never, never endorsed a candidate for president until now, saying this is not a normal election and these are not normal times. The USA Today editorial board, which is separate from the news department, endorsed Joe Biden for president. Here are the words. "We don't do this eagerly," said editorial page editor Bill Sternberg. "We hope we don't have to do it again, but it seems like one of those break glass moments where there's a clear and present danger and there's a clear choice." Strong.
Well, I think it's happening all over the country. Look at the Wall Street Journal. Look what's happened just recently, this last week. The editorial page takes one view, but the news page about this junk, excuse me, that's my view, of Hunter Biden and Joe Biden, and look what they did, and look at they're corrupt and all of that. The editorial page seems to suggest that, yes, that's right, we got to look at this. And the reporters who've dug into the story, looked at the facts, have written Wall Street Journal stories saying no. I mean, all over, this house is divided. As Lincoln quoted, you know, families are divided. It's not a civil war yet in which one brother goes to the south and one brother goes to the north and they meet at Gettysburg and one gets killed and the other doesn't. But it is a time when the USA Today can break a precedent and say, we're going to endorse. Other newspapers have done the same thing. Other people have done the same thing. John Meacham, the great historian, he's never endorsed anyone until now, and he's going to vote for Biden, he says, for the obvious reasons. I don't see a lot of people coming out and suddenly deciding they'll vote for Trump. I mean, prominent people who have never spoken. The generals, some of them have spoken. Some of them still, like Mattis and Kelly, are keeping their own counsel, at least publicly, while letting it be known how they feel about the man they once served. This is an unusual moment, and I think everyone, no matter how you feel about it, must take it seriously. And I hope none of us on either side resort to violence and will accept a fair election with votes fairly counted. But I'm not sure.
One more election question, but before we get to it, I just got to ask this question, because this is one non-election question, but it was such a big deal. Pope Francis became the first pontiff last week to endorse same-sex civil unions. It's for a documentary that came out last week, but this is what the Pope said. "Homosexual people have the right to be in a family. They are the children of God. You can't kick someone out of a family nor make their life miserable for this. What we have to have is a civil union law. That way they are legally covered." Does this surprise you from Pope Francis?
No, it doesn't surprise me, because the Catholic Church, ever since John the 23rd, in the early 60s, has been moving away from a dogma which is exclusive into one that's inclusive, has been moving toward a world that I believe is happening, and I think in this country is happening, whether it's the same-sex marriage, we are moving toward, use the dreaded word, toward a liberal idea of people, society, and treating one another, rather than an idea in which some of us are better than the others, some of us have a right to more than the others, some of us can be exclusive and make certain that we're not bothered by these people who can take our guns out and they try to parade back our house, we threaten them, and it doesn't surprise me that this Pope is also moving toward a modern view of society rather than a theological view of the Roman Catholic Church through the ages, went back to the time when they put people on the rack in Torquemada to judge whether you were a good Christian or not, or Salem, Massachusetts. I mean, I just think the whole world is moving, if we help it, toward democracy, toward freedom. Yes, at the moment, some states have gone back, Romania, Poland, look at Erdogan in Turkey, etc. Look at Maduro, look at the Philippines, all right. But I believe we're still moving toward freedom and community and humanity. And I hope this election will turn out, as I believe it will turn out, that we in this country will hold back now in a rush toward what? Autocracy, a dictatorship, freedom for some, but not for others. We don't want that, and I don't think we're going to have that.
Sam, before we part ways, here comes the fastball. I do want to let the audience know that Sam has agreed when we know who the next president's going to be, which maybe could be Wednesday morning. We don't know. Sam will come back with us, and we'll discuss whatever's going on. But here's the fast pitch for you, Sam. Taking all opinion out of it, taking all thought out of it at this point, when we speak next, what percentage, 1 to 100, are you sure that Joe Biden will be the president-elect?
I'm, again, give me the caveat. Assuming the election is not disrupted by the kind of violence and tactics which throws it into an unknown territory for weeks, if some people even think months, if the ballots are fairly counted and those that don't qualify are thrown out, that's good. I believe with a great certainty, and I mean approaching 90%, I mean approaching, you know, give me the saddle, or rather the space material that blows half the states, that Biden will be elected president. I'm not so certain about the Senate, as you and I talked. I think it will flip. I think getting at least 4 seats to change is a good probability, but I'm not going to say 90%. But I'm really, really certain that fairly counted, Biden will be elected president by a great number of votes and by a large majority.
All you can say if you've listened the last hour, the absolute best, Sam Donaldson. Sam, thank you, and we're going to talk again within a week, I'm sure.
I'll be there, Scott. Thanks.
Thank you, Sam. Take care. Sam Donaldson. Guess what? We're coming back in 10 minutes.
225-4495, webpage, crtmechanical.com.
Hey everybody, it's Pastor Steve Whitaker from the Pastor Spot. We are on every Tuesday at 5:15 and replay again on Wednesday at 3:15.